9:13 a.m. on the 30th day of March, 2012. Members present, Representative Edinburgh, Representative Wilson, Representative Herrera, Vice Chair, Fairclough, Saltz, Representative Thomas, Representative Kevin, Representative Edmund, Representative Castell, and Representative Robert, one voice. Sorry, excuse me. We have two bills for today. House Bill 313, Representative Feige, and Ronald Goodman's name in the committee for recall. House Bill 64, which is a merged version of House Bill 64, and we've got a few versions of it.
It's all been getting here, so I've almost got this thing figured out.
It's a formality, and the Vice Chair will give the version of the bill before us.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill 313, Education 27-LS1223-B.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's before us, and let's take as much time as you need to mind and keep the progress of the next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Representative Eric Feige, representing District 12. And the subject of obviously today's conversation is House Bill 313. Our school districts need effective tools to plan and budget for the education curriculum. The purpose of this bill is to base the funding from each school district in the state on the count conducted during the preceding fiscal year. For example, the count conducted in fiscal year 2014 will establish the funding level for that district for fiscal year 2015. Under House Bill 313, districts will be able to complete the budget process and determine staffing levels earlier, eliminate unnecessary layoff notices, and execute employment contracts to improve the stability of the education fund in both the district and the state. The new funding formula will not change the old homeless clause currently in existence. If a decrease in enrollment of 5% or more occurs, the district will continue to receive funding based upon the average daily membership, plus the 75, 15, 25% addition over the succeeding 3 years. Other provisions of the foundation formula remain unchanged by this bill as well. If the district has an increase in student count of 200 students or 3% or more over the previous year, supplemental funding will be provided to the district for the current fiscal year, helping districts deal with large changes in the population. House Bill 313 also increases transparency in the governmental budgeting process by prohibiting the current practice that allows municipalities to take funds back from school districts at the end of the fiscal year. The new funding method will implement the fiscal year 2015. Thus, the count conducted in the fall of 2013 will provide funding level for both fiscal year 2014 and 2015, subject to the performance provisions. At this point, I'll pass the baton off to my staff and pass it over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pascal. For the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige, and got a short presentation for you to address some of the components of the bill. And this bill was developed out of the request of one of the REAs to address how the average daily membership is applied to the BSA. We worked for several reviews with just from one district, but there are others involved. Initially, there was one, and then there was discussion with other districts during the process. So they initiated with one RA, And over the course of the process, working on it, being different size districts and districts in different situations, we ended up making some modifications to hopefully meet the needs of all the districts. Right now, I'm not aware of any district that objects to this bill. And if there is one out there who would like to know from the same point of view to address their concerns, because we believe we've done that. As Representative Feige, I think Wilson.
Can you tell people what REA
it stands for?
Board of Education attendance area, which are the school districts that are not within the municipality. The first slide here is kind of an explanation of the budgeting process. And what happens with districts is that, for example, in the spring of 2011, they do the budgeting process. It's based upon an estimate that's made in January. And then in October of that year, they get an actual count done. And then in January, that count is confirmed. So now that you're halfway through your fiscal year, you actually find out the number of students that you actually have as the ADM to be used to determine what your budget was for that fiscal year that you're already in. During July through March, an estimated payment is made based upon that estimate from January of that year. And then in April through June, the payments to the district are just either up or down to compensate for any over or under payment during the first 9 months. Under this bill, the way it's proposed, what happens is the count that's conducted in, for example, October of 2013 is confirmed in January of 2014. Then the budget is done during the spring process. Now that they have an actual number to work with for the upcoming, in this case, fiscal year 15. Payments would be made under the same basic procedure in July through March would be actual payments. April through June would be actual payments unless the harmless supplemental provisions of the bill kick in which case there would be changes and then increases in the funding to the district. The checks are going to be. One of the things we looked at in this bill was variations that in the ADM projections versus the actuals. We just looked at 1 year here, fiscal year 2011. And the differences in terms of the extremes, which was the concern, is the district is too far off between their projection or actual numbers, and they have to deal with budget issues every year. Just looking at it from an account standpoint, one district was 743 students too high. It was obviously a larger district because it only represented 1.5% of their population. And one district was 192 students too low, and it only represented 0.84.
Mr. Chair, what do you mean, too high, and too low for what? Is this under the current situation or applying legislation?
That is applying the current process for the investment in January to do their budgeting. And then the following, or January, February, when they're doing their budgeting, and then the following year later, when they actually get the numbers that calculate how much money they are actually going to receive. So this was the variations for fiscal year 11, the extremes for that. And this is under the existing process.
Chair, I'm sorry. So what does the too high mean? There's 743 students too high.
They estimated that they were going to have 743 more students than they actually had show up.
Okay, so what you're saying is that there is a projection. Basically, if you're going to be gambling, you don't want somebody who's involved in these projections.
That would be a good way to look at it because that's what the districts are doing, and these were the worst cases for that year. Some districts were very close, but. And just on a percentage standpoint, 9.8% was the largest percentage on the high side, and 15.8% on the low side.
Can you tell us?
Thank you. If we're starting with REA, how did you end up with big numbers who were talking REAs at first? You went to other school districts, you went to bigger school districts, and to me, I thought REAs were small. You know, public schools.
Representative Thomas, the chair. I believe all of the top four or five districts in the state are all municipal school districts, but some of the REAs are also larger districts.
Representative Duke is here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an
differences, the variations in the projections. Are we talking about the confirmation row on the first slide?
Yes. No, sir. In the future, the current slide that I have up, what we're looking at is from the first line beginning this split in January 2011.
And I understand that.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is on the second slide that says for FY 2011 variations range from, and I was wondering where we were deciding what the amounts of those variations are.
The difference between the estimate and confirmation. I'm concerned about the base out of the drop where, let's say it's 2012, you have a student out of 10,000 children. You base your 2013 budget under this bill on your 2012 numbers, but your students have gone up by 1,000. You don't get the money at the beginning of the school year, or do you? So you have a provision that says, look, if it turns out student counts have gone up and over last year, we use the new number, but when is that new number going to implement? When is this? Does the school get the money at the beginning of the year or after the beginning of the year?
Representative Garrett, through the chair. The funding comes in for that district during the last quarter of the year because they can't implement the actual numbers if there's a large increase until after the confirmation count is done. There are a couple provisions in this bill to address, and I think you're hit with a couple of issues, so if you want me to get to there, we'll try to address that. Just looking at a picture of the understanding professor.
The slide prior to that, it might be easier for me to understand than maybe others. You said 743 students too high or students too low. What districts did they came come from? If I could relate this to where the district you come from, I could relate it around the state.
We have some amendments in the chair. I'll probably have to get that information for you. I do not remember offhand which districts are used because I was looking more at the numbers. The 743 is obviously the Anchorage Mansi.
Yeah. I would say probably Anchorage and Mansi. Anchorage is too high. Mansi is too low.
Yeah, good for both of them. Looking here over since 1988, obviously there were increases, but now as you can see, it's relatively flat. When we zoom in on the last 10 years, we can actually see statewide there's a slight decline. It was 3,627 students, so there was a slight decline in enrollment. Which means implementing this type of change, there's not a lot of volatility in the statewide enrollment. We do want to look at the districts that are the biggest losers in names and population. Here are the districts that are losing the largest number of students over the last 10 years, broken down by each of the districts. And then we also looked at the districts that have the biggest gains. And what their gains are, there are a couple of anomalies here. The two districts there at the bottom of the screen, and that's related to cyber schools. One of the other issues that was alluded to a little bit is the timing of the money when the districts get it. One of the two issues that impact districts and state pertaining to that. The first one is the funds that are returned to the municipalities. Practice I was not aware of, but I do not live in one of the borough school districts. But the many of the municipalities at the end of the year take money back from the districts if it's not actually spent. So what's happening is the money's being returned back to the borough and then reallocated again to the district in a future budgeting process. We just have two districts that provided us with this information to give you an idea of the amount of money that was being returned to. What happens in that process is it depletes their reserves so that they do not have much of a reserve balance. One of the provisions of the bill is to increase the reserve balance from 10% of the current year's funds to 15% as a maximum amount of unrestricted reserves to give the districts more flexibility in acquiring funds for projects that they want to accomplish. And this was provided by one of the districts, showing that the Government Financial Officers Association recommended originally 5 to 15% as a minimum, and they changed that in 2011 to 2 months, which works out to approximately 15%, so which is where we're trying to move it to with that bill. Any questions at this point?
Thank you, Thomas.
I'm not here for the school board, okay? And we were concerned we ended up in negotiations, so we wanted to make money. How do you get out of that? If you build up to be a resource, I mean, that's a big number, but I know it's not my school district, but it does cause, negotiations.
Representative Thomas, through the chair, and that's the option of the district is how much they want to have in their reserve. What we were hearing was several different positions from districts. One is we can't put any money in reserve because the municipalities take it back. Two is we bump up against our reserve too easily. We like to have it 8 or 10 or 12%, but we're bumping up against the 10% line, and we have to get money out. Somehow we have to spend it somewhere or lose it and gets back to the state or someone. So whether they would want to move to 15% or not, I couldn't answer that. Would come good for the board to give us a little more flexibility.
We hear all the refrains during the negotiation process for wash your cash, you've got money raffles somewhere else, you've got it hidden somewhere. So this is, those all seem to be the words that pop up. Representative
Newman. Mr. Chair, Mike. And on the math, Sue, 50% of unspent funds generally get swept, whereas this has the ability to be swept over to back into the bank. So by OGF, what they've been doing is they create a fund for purchasing land for future schools. So instead of going back to the borough OGF, it goes into a fund that is that typical of what a lot of other school districts do.
Representative, through the chair. But it varies widely across the districts, and some of the districts actually have a very good relationship with their borough on that issue. One borough in particular, I understand, takes all of their money back, but the district is perfectly happy with that. So at that time, the district will have to do is make an adjustment in their budgeting process to account for that. But I do not know specifically, for example, if they're being stressed with their money in the North Star borough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to jump into the public testimony here, so we'll
Matthew Burrow, Ken Forrest.
Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We are in support of 313, and I'd like to just briefly talk about a couple of the provisions. The provision which would provide supplemental funding for growing districts would directly impact our district. Over the last 10 years, our annual growth has been 425 students. And when you have growth at that level, you have expenditures which are outside of the normal operational or instructional expenditures. We have, for example, 72 modular portable units, if you will, in use to house the number of students that have come into the district. Those modulars cost a little over $100,000 to be built or purchased and equipped. And in addition to that expenditure that comes with the additional students, we have technology that we need to purchase for the students, infrastructure improvements, and classroom funded with the foundation formula. So we feel the supplemental is very important. With regard to the fund balance captured by the borough, while the funds are diverted into a fund for land purchase for future schools, we believe that it would be better to have those funds in a reserve at the school district level for operational purchases. And as we just did here, the borough passed a $214,495,000 bond issue. In each of the projects that were approved by me, there was money set aside for land purchase so that it doesn't come out of operational dollars. Those funds are then out of capital dollars that the local citizens are contributing in excess of $64 million to fund the new schools, to replace the existing modulars and accommodate the additional growth. To address the enrollment differences, for example, over the last 10 years, our enrollment reductions have been on average within 0.4%, so 99.6% accurate. However, when you get to a large district like ours, we were 0.4% off this year, and that was 75 students. With regard to the reserve, currently, because over the last 10 years we have given back over $8 million to the borough, we only have 0.7% reserve, well below the recommended amounts for the Government Finance Officers Association. This does not to smooth variations in expenditures or revenue, which results in direct impact in the classroom because our layoffs are immediate when we have any changes related to that. On the discussion related to negotiations, fund balance are those monies are one-time funds and really should never be employed for ongoing expenditures such as teacher salaries. That. So again, I would recommend that House Bill 313 as written would be a strong support for local school board of education control over education. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
You're probably the best person to explain this to me because you have a growing school district. What I don't understand about the bill is just because it's early and I haven't had a chance to read it, but it seems like if you're a growing school district, you're going to get your money based on last year's population, so you're going to be underfunded. The supplemental funding, I don't understand, there's no definition as to how that works, how much supplemental funding or when you get it. So why are you not short-funded until, why are you not short-funded under this bill if you're a growing school district? If you're basing it on last year's counts?
Yes, sir, through the chair. We would be short-funded on last year's counts if we fell below the 200 per pupil increase, but we could receive the supplemental funds in years we were above 200. And looking at the historic average, we believe it's going to even out over time. You are correct in that a year when our student increases below 200, it is possible that for that one fiscal year, we would be short those funds.
Then just one other question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The way the foundation formula works right now, for every additional student, you get a certain amount of additional money. Why should we? I'm a little concerned about just the one sentence that says you don't get the additional money unless you're 200 students off. What if you're 150 students off? Why shouldn't you get the additional funds if you're 150 students off? I mean, if your students have grown by 150 students, why shouldn't you get those funds?
Well, as a growing district, we certainly would appreciate the funds, but I think the intent of the bill, and I don't want to speak for the author, is to provide a planning of when do we move to school, and we plan knowing what their numbers are. So that aids in that 0.4% variance.
Thank you.
It would be somewhat confused to me because people. We just listened for 3 or 4 days and school districts on the way for you now. You're saying that was impossible to back to municipalities. So we've got a couple of months for people saying it's kind of confusing. And also, we've got a big list of
municipalities can better contribute to the gap. So at the same time, not helping the communities and the school districts get the money that they needed. So it has
virtually every school district that came here has said that they're short on funds. You said that we've got extra money that sweeps back and so I'm trying to figure this out, and I understand that you just said you should not be able to put that towards financing for the personnel, but there's a lot of needs in the schools. There's lots of needs, whether it's buying books or pencils or papers or calculators or whiteboards or whatever it may be. How can you end up, why do we have extra money when schools are saying we don't have enough money?
Yes, sir,
explain to me what you get out of that and what you lose and kind of the history of how that evolved for you.
Yes, sir. We requested last year, the school board requested through a resolution to the borough that they allow the fund balance of the school district to remain with the school district. That failed by one vote. So the Board of Education again submitted a similar resolution this year. And what we get with that, we need to build a reserve, which would allow us to smooth any changes or dramatic changes, but also provide, as I indicated, a little more than 1.5 days worth of operating capital should something go wrong. For example, a few years ago, Sioux Valley burned down, and we had to scramble and try and put money together to equip the building, the borough, and through the insurance, was able to rebuild the building. But we had to find almost $1 million to put together to equip the building. And with no reserve of any appreciable size, that becomes extremely difficult because you're having to keep your cost sizes as small as possible by having them. And when you do that, you push the limits of your expenditures. So, we do feel that a reasonable reserve, the space limit is currently 10%. We are at 0.7%. That's all we have in this district right now.
Just to follow up. So I understand that side of it, but what I'm trying to figure out is, what is the borough's responsibility to the school board? Does it do major maintenance? Does it do bonding for new schools? Does it build new schools? What do you get in return for that? Because at some point in the past, there was a reason why the borough made this decision. And it's had it with the school board. I don't know how long it's been in place and how well it's worked, but I don't see anything here from the borough from their position.
I don't want to speak to the borough, but their position is that the district does not need a reserve and that we should be operating as efficiently and as effectively as possible, they outlined. They take the money that's wrapped, as was previously said, to put it into an account to purchase school land. Again, our position is those dollars would be better used in the classroom, and we should, as we have recently done, have bond issues to buy land and build buildings. So, and it was the school district initiative which initiated the bond, and of course, you said we had to put it on the ballot, but it was the school board who took the initiative to place that bond on the ballot, just as it was for other issues. Recently, the girl has not taken the lead on major maintenance bond issues in school district as that.
Okay, thank you, Phil. I just want to point out here, I've got the lack of local effort. That Maxie was crumbling always below the local contribution of the support. So this, maybe that's what it was actually like. I don't know. Nothing there. I didn't read you there.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any information?
Okay, later. Superintendent, Dr. Moody's school district. Chairman Thomas, represent the South Finance Committee. I take the opportunity, we are one of the RPAA's school districts that doesn't have the benefit of local funding from a borough or municipality. So I want to point out our support for House Bill 313 in a couple of ways. In our budgetary process, there are several questions, primarily four questions that we have to answer. Number one, our legal process is how these students will be projected and will have in the following school year. In addition to that, the GSA dollars that will result. And then third, after we have a projection or estimated number of students, the amount of dollars that those students will bring into the district. Third, is can we provide, continue to provide grant programs in the next year? And if not, what in those programs, whether personnel or programs themselves, will we have to cut? And number four, we don't actually have an answer to this question until the down date in October of the school year. How many students actually show up to the district, and what is the result of funding that goes to those students? With this bill, I definitely those questions are answered for us early on so that we can accurately devise the financial package or budget for a school district. And that will allow us to put the most money and effort into providing effective programs for students. Additionally, our student population has been fairly stable in the last two fiscal years, but over the last 10 years, we've seen decreases from 5% down to 2%. Additionally, with House Bill 313, it would provide effective planning to optimize for program delivery, but allows to prior planning for student services and programs. And also the ability to offer contracts for personnel to deliver these programs as stipulated by statute more effectively and efficiently prior to the March 16th deadline. All right, open for questions.
Questions? Let's see. Thank you. That's what I think the school fund is more funding from. We're supposed to do everything we're kind of talking about here. So, the bonus for the rates, you're on the line.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am.
Name of affiliation?
Well, Pete Lewis, Superintendent Fairbanks Mercer Cross School District. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we too are in support of House Bill 313. We believe this gives us another tool in terms of our budget planning process. And in the interest of time and further comments, I'll just say to Mrs. Morris that you can end Superintendent Ware from articulated the position very well in terms of why this is important for school districts, so we are already supporting the bill.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, it's my understanding, though, that the borough just re-looked at that fund allocation and bringing it back, and they again chose to kind of sweep those fundings. What was the reason for continuing that practice?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe you're referring to the last ordinance, and the borough continues with the last ordinance, and it was just adjusted to a cap of $800,000 by its GSA
in fall. And so this bill would make it to where that ordinance would not take effect because this would allow you to have more of your reserves. Is that correct?
That is correct. And our June 30th audited unassigned fund balance was zero.
Thank you.
Just two questions. One, just on the reserves question. I mean, don't school districts keep reserves just in case state school funding or city school funding isn't enough to keep them from laying off teachers or canceling programs? Is that the purpose of the reserves, to try and level out the course disruption and staff disruption?
Through the chair, yes, and we certainly would like to have that. We do have some assigned fund balance, mostly in the form of our inventory and contracting.
Yeah, just one question about the bill. On page 8, it says if you know you're basing your, if you get your money based on last year's student count, if you're off by more than 200 students or 3%, we'll make an adjustment for you the next year. But I mean, what if you're off by 180 students or 2.7%, then you don't get the money. Wouldn't that be important money to get? If, I mean, historically, you get funding based on the exact number of students. Would you be okay with the change that said if we're off and you actually had more students, you get that difference in funding, and not based on a 200 student or 300 or 3% threshold?
Through the chair, we would be okay with the bill as written. On page 8, I believe the last portion of the undefined section, starting with line 25, speaks to if we're unable to meet the current fiscal year needs, that you can make an application to the department for supplemental funding should you need that. If that is
people that would normally think about going that they do in October.
persons and ways to credit school to take. And that's you that talked about getting 99% accuracy in the projections. That's not good enough. 9.95 students in a small school loses funding for the year you're already in. You're already committed to a teacher and like the fuel for once a year. And they spend $40,000 a year fuel just by once a year and have to make the decision. Anything in Hospital 313 is would be good for us in that I can predict that time I can hire good teachers for the year for the following year. I can take a chance on a school if I have that individual vision. Because I really can't know what some of those which one is going to collapse and which one won't. And it gives us a little bit of security. And I guess that's my point. Thank you very much.
Questions? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else on the line that wants to testify? Anybody in the audience? Statement will close public testimony. We'll set this aside. And we'll bring up the one that we have here. We'll take a break. We'll find us the sponsor. Okay. We'll take a brief reason.
CS.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS House Bill number 64 finance before the committee 27-LSO327-S-LOPIC-32612.
I will object to review the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Darrell Reese, and staff representative Bill Schultz. House Bill 64 was up before the CS combined with House Bill 10, which is offered for registration for trailers, and House Bill 64, which offered for registration to motor vehicles under 8 years old that are not used for commercial use, as a possible trailers can be motor vehicles. What has changed in this version of the CS? There's two major changes we're running. We adjusted the fee for car and burner registration for both vehicles under 8 years old and trailers. The previous version had it at 3 times the biannual fee that the current version doesn't. At the biannual fee plus the $25 burner registration fee, the goal is to make this affordable to all of us who wanted this option. Figuring that the people driving vehicles at 8 years old are those of the probably not paying for a higher fee, we want to make this option available, especially for vehicle owners to be able to qualify for this option. The change in fee for trailers is to bring it more in line with what the current statute is for commercial trailers, which was set at a permit fee of $20 in 1998 and was raised to $25 in 2004. The second change is related to the motor vehicle registration tax that DMV collects for 16 municipalities for Alaska. And what the change is that it allows the municipalities by ordinance to adopt a motor vehicle registration tax fee for vehicles that are currently registered. That's normally allowed to do that under the current statute for other vehicles based on the age. This allows them for vehicles that are registered permanently to design tax. If Joe registers his car currently, it's a long time tax until their registration. And this allows them to spouse the same rate and what they believe is appropriate by ordinance, and they have to provide notification to DMV. And that's the state that they've changed their fee by January the 1st of the year previous to the fee taking, the change in fee taking into effect. The change of instruction that we made to the collection of the tax is to DMV will continue to collect the tax at the time of registration. It's a one-time tax on registered vehicles, one time to be collected by definition in statute. But if the municipality raises that fee above $100, the Department of Motor Vehicles will no longer collect the tax, since the city is bound to borrow into some of the tax to collect that tax themselves. If the fee goes below $100. Those are the main points that have changed structurally, still the same as the previous CS we had before you. Just the changes in fees and the collection of the tax that goes below $100. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And just to, Mr. Co-Chairman, thank you. It's a bill I've worked on up here in this Kramer Center for longer than it's been down here. And Kramer from Seinfeld for those that have been up here since 1998. The time we passed the legislature passed the generous provision for commercial trailers. And the intent is not just the allowing Alaskans to keep money in their pocket. It's one of the things that the fact of tax is only not reflected in amenities or facilities that are put forth for the use of those vehicles. I think it is a tax. Thank you. Trying to find a middle ground one is to avoid the nuisance of multiple new registered of renting when your car is 8 years old. You've paid a big chunk of the taxes on it through local governments that do collect it. At that point, I think we reached a point where the fiscal impact is going to be less significant for the immediate 8 year old vehicle. And as Mr. Bree said, people are still driving their 8 year old vehicles either there. Either you're a frugal driver, Warren Buffett never gets a new car, or you like the rest of us, you drive your cars because you can afford your life. The combination one is the convenience of at some point, I don't want to have to deal with government anymore. That's not a small issue for a lot of my constituents, and a lot of years I've talked to you during radio shows and forums. At some point, government's got enough out of taxing people. They just capped at $100 as the list of the munis. If they don't want to take that one time, they have the list. Themselves. Those municipalities know how to get to their people. They sure find
the taxpayers.
So, plus, there is a significant projected fiscal load, and that's really, there's a lot of speculation in it, you're guessing. But it is, I caution people that there's a lot of fiscal damage with this. That's the summary of it. Probably less concise in this degree, but probably a little more editorial in there.
Okay, questions? I deal with a lot of non-residents.
I like the concept, but life of me, I can't understand the fiscal law. So, in FY15 and FY16, we lose $5 and $6 million in revenue, but 17 and 18 we gain $17 and $20 million in revenue, or am I reading that backwards?
That's less.
Usually trailer for a couple years if the drainage isn't open for department and get the same measurement. You know, maybe you get your boat trade results. And certainly there's some years when there's not snow on the ground. This year certainly is not the case. You don't bring your snow machine trailer up. Alaska just forgets. There's it in the yard. And for some of us, it's a dignity vehicle. It's an 8-year-old vehicle. If you ride as hard as those of us in our world, this case, a pickup truck is 99, but I use it if I was driving every day, you know, wheels that are falling off on it. I don't get 8 years of solid continual use of the vehicle. And people that are doing those 100-mile commutes, it's like you're taking a gamble. You're betting that your gamble is going to last and you're going to sell it. So there's probably some things not reflected with this one. Alaska is, especially in South Central, very mobile. People in certain industries turn over people in knowledge. You're going to take a gamble whether or not you're going to be here. So it's really hard to calculate those at this point, how much flip side it costs. And right, I'll spend extra money on half that. With all due respect, not having to go to DMV more often. But it's delightful as many as our staff orders that have to go to
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to put on the record that I may have a conflict in driving a vehicle that's over 8 years and would qualify for this.
Even this job, there's a lot of people in the U.S. My red truck that is going to be 8 years old next year. Well, it wasn't for the car wash, it was for the bus. You got any questions? Did you have any input from the representative of the
government? It's something that almost amazes me. The $700 of programming time. Can you explain that? I'm sure that's what the programs told you it was going to take.
Through the chair, Representative Edward, yes, I did consult my IT staff on changes to the database and what would be required to occur. I would like the committee to know that the DMV's database is currently 30 years old. It's a mainframe database and has many, many layers of programming. This would be a complete rewrite of the DMV's vehicle, the vehicle programming. We would be required to have basically two scenarios available to customers, those that opt for permanent vehicle registration and those that choose not to, which would make the algorithm fairly complicated. Not only would that be required for vehicles, it would be required for the trailer programming as well. So the 700 estimated hours is a combination of both HV64 and HV10.
Mr. Chair, I just want to put on record that I had no request for a platform from DMV for new DMVs.
We had to force out of there 2 years ago to upgrade the computers. And they did request it, but they sat here and told us that theirs was 20 years old. And maybe, but my fear, maybe you didn't replace it. I got representative of the pressure.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Ms. Brister, how many people access and show up at DMV counters in person across the state of Alaska? Do you have that number, or do you know that?
Through the chair, Representative, I don't have the specific number that you are asking for. I can certainly find it for you and give it to you. But I can tell you that approximately 11% of our customers do come to our counters for in-person registration.
Thank you, Ms. Brister. So for the committee, what I was going to point out is depending on how many customers actually show up for this, I don't see it reflected in the fiscal note, the deduction that would be in response to less people coming in to try to register. So we calculated the software and that increase, but there would be, we would hope, cost savings on the other side, not only to the consumer, but to the department itself and being able to have less people accessing for this service. Now, I would say that I believe at least once I've done the online, if not multiple times, to save the $10 and not go to the DMVs. But if it's only if it's down to 11% now, maybe it wouldn't be as much of an impact to the department as I'm receiving. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Minister, this automobile vehicles take in more money than they need to operate their operating costs and so on much easier.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the DMV takes in approximately $56 million a year in revenue, and we operate on approximately $16.5 million. I might note, though, that that $66.8 million it does include the motor vehicle registration tax that we do collect, and I'm approximating that we collect about $12.1 million on behalf of the 16 municipalities across the state. So we're looking at about the collection of $55 million to go directly to the general fund.
So, Ms. Brewster, if we were to adjust the fees on here for license and registration to make it so the state only collected half the excess revenue, what would we be looking at? Fees for license, do you think? I mean, if that license, why would you be making money at DMV?
If
the
I understand what you're saying. I can't speak to the specifics of the numbers that we've been talking about, but I think that we could easily say that these could be reduced and the DMV could operate on, that these could be reduced to customers significantly and the DMV will be able to operate.
I understand. It would be interesting to see what those numbers would be. If we could maybe fix a little bit of that in this bill, we could help you a little bit more. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'll yield to Representative Fairclough if she had a point on that question.
Mr. Chairman, what I was going to ask our follow-up is, do we charge the municipalities a fee to send them the money that they're... Is there an administrative fee? If we could just get that on the record.
Through the Representative Fairclough, yes, the DMV collects 8% of the fee of the motor vehicle registration taxes collected each year on the general fund.
A couple of questions that I think I know the answers to Ms. Brewster. One would be, obviously there's no federal ties in terms of this money. I mean, the state eligible for any federal funds. The answer I think is pretty clear. I know, but is that the case? My second question would be, in terms of, and again, I like this bill, I'm not trying to administer thousands of slices here or anything like that. This will have some impact on the revenue base for communities across the state, one or two, albeit negligible, I'm assuming.
I'd like to specify that, one, the local communities that have elected to collect motor vehicle registration tax would not be eligible in the way that I read this bill until 2017 to collect a permanent motor vehicle registration tax. So, because of the requirements in the statute that the local communities provide the DMV written notice of the change by January 1, 2015, I'm will be able to start collecting a motor vehicle registration tax for permanent vehicles until 2017, because they would have had to notify us by January 1, 2015 of a change for 2015. So there may be some lag time in permanent registration, motor vehicle registration tax collecting there. Beyond that, it would be completely coming up on the local government to set their own rate, but that's what they would like the DMV to collect when it comes to this. And I think that the question about being lost or gained would be better suited to be answered by the local government.
Okay, and then a couple of points. One, like yourself, Representative Thomas, all the people trucks come out, all the non-resident and fishermen, all the Bellingham and Niagara Claw, we've got, well over 100 easily. And these are all paper trucks. These are some 1972 Chevys, they're real Dodge paper cars, which are like, weird relationship in the 60s, or whatever it might be, just playing around there. I'm last you spelled wrong on the fiscal one, too. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Good last question. I hope I can figure out. Hopefully, you just wanted it. You agree, man. I'm sorry, I don't want to. Okay, I'll remove my objection for the CS. This is in the committee. Next time. This will not be, I think, really part of that.
I'm sure to just have the other fiscal one if I like. That was zero previously had fiscal impact Department of Environmental Conservation with the repeal of the emissions program, they increased their fiscal reserve. Which has happened during this process.
Sure, did you want me to go over the fiscal note?
Thank you. I forgot to, before doing question whether or not we might have a conflict here, I forgot to say that you said most recently drove a 22-year-old manual but my medical problems keep me from driving it anymore. But my wife drives a 16-year-old vehicle. She wants to change that up.
Mr. Chairman, please open the public hearing and close the public hearing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, the CS for House Bill Number 64 Finance, 27-0327, attached fiscal notes, and individual committee recommendations.
Is anybody leaving town today? We'll have to leave that optional. We'll see if there's a couple other bills we can do. If there's a deal, we're supposed to call you back.
Yeah, the only one at the end we're going to see, I believe.
But I'd like to see if there's a couple other that are marked for the anxious thing.
Would that fix it? Sure. Maybe yes. We'll be back for 1-3.
All right, these are all marked up.